Rodgers, who the only place he's going to take you to is the toilet bowl. And then you got Brett Favre, who will take you to the Super Bowl.
I do like me a triple butterburger with cheese and the works, you know, ketchup, mustard, pickles.
Could the package be really good? Yeah, I certainly would love that. But also, to say that, is this look like a rebuild? Probably.
If you think we're in a rebuild, then you got the wrong team.
QB1, man.
Come on, man.
Best QB in the league right now.
What's up, John Money?
You ran right in front of me, I was like, huh?
What's up, guys? This is Jeff Janis.
And Janis, there's a stop it! Oh, please! What a cat! That's insane!
You're listening to the Poor Man's Packers Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Poor Man's Packers Podcast, the Norm Packers Podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Billy and Todd, boys.
Hello, hello.
Greetings, gentlemen.
And after a long, terrible hiatus, oh man, the podcast is back. The fans were just chomping at the bit, ready to hear from us. We're, you know, it's about a week in the training camp, and quite a few things have changed. A lot of fun stuff. No one cares about our summers, right? Anything new? Anything Packers related over the summer for any of you guys? Yes, no, maybe.
Nothing Packers related.
Very cool.
I went to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, if that counts.
Oh, yeah. How was
Packers
that?
Related? A lot of Packers there.
It was fun. I was kind of surprised. I thought it would be bigger, honestly. Yeah. But yeah, the one takeaway that I have from Canton is the street blade signs, extremely small, really difficult to read them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I can see you, Billy, not being a GPS guy. Like, you're a map guy, so you're actually looking at the street blades as opposed to the rest of us.
Like the atlas, like the big book.
He's got a globe in the shotgun seat spinning around, pointing. Yeah, because Todd and I, we'd been to the Hall of Fame like over 10 years ago. And yeah, I didn't think it was super big either. A lot of cool artifacts in there, and it's cool seeing the history. And I said it to you, Billy, before he went there. The thing that sticks out to me is how bad the Bart Starr bust is. It's probably came up on the podcast before too, but if you're at home listening, just Google it. It is not good. He's got a bit of a horse face, and it's almost like he's melted. You could tell it was like 80s or 70s. They did not have the premier artist on Bart Starr that day.
I mean, it was kind of funny, like, the friend and I that I went with, we're walking through and looking at all the different busts and everything, and we'd be like, that doesn't look anything like so-and-so. That doesn't look anything like so-and-so. Like, Kurt Warner's is bad, I think.
Kurt's is bad. I actually remember that one.
But then there are others where it's like, yeah, that one's actually really good.
Yeah, God. And I'm trying to, because even like the real old guys, like Tony Canedo and shit, like looked better than Bart Starr. Maybe that's just because 100 years ago when he was playing, they were more like accustomed to the
arts.
That's because
all
and, like,
we have
marble
is paintings of those guys.
Yeah, right. So we don't have the actual realistic person to
the same
judge
guy that
off
did
of.
The bust. He drew the painting.
Yeah, he's looking at newspaper clippings of Tony Canedo's face or whatever. But all right, we'll just get into this episode. God, again, just so much is, and I am part of why we waited is because the Jordan Love contract was so damn annoying. Like, it, the contract storylines are always boring and piss me off because it's like, we know it's going to get done, and any type of dialogue that comes up beforehand is stupid. Because there was even like the guy on ESPN Milwaukee who was saying Jordan Love's being selfish, and other guys were saying, oh, the Packers just need to get a deal done. It's like, we don't even know what the fuck they're talking about, and we're going to complain about it taking this long. So I don't know. Well, Jordan Love signed his new deal, getting into it. What was the whole thing here? God, I didn't even write that down. 4 years, $220 million. So he averages getting 55 per, most in the league, which is tied with Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence. However, the cap hits, again, the Packers always have goofy things with their contracts. So the cap hits, which is kind of important, there isn't a cap hit for Jordan Love over $33 million until 2028. So that's pretty good. That's reasonable. If you remember last year, we paid $45 million for Aaron Rodgers, who obviously wasn't on the roster. The other big thing with this contract was the guaranteed money, which is usually the most important thing as far as when you're signing the contract, when you're Jordan Love here. So he is not even in the top 10 for guaranteed money. Again, he's tied for the most per year, but not in the top 10. $155 million. Just for reference, Joe Burrow has the highest guarantee at $219 million. So a couple interesting things there, but kicking things off, Todd, what were your initial thoughts on the contract? Are you excited it's over? Were you worried at all? What are your thoughts?
Definitely excited that it's over. I was hoping it would get done when it did, like the Friday. Was it Friday that it yep. was signed?
Yeah, Friday.
That was evening. Like a lot of the different like writers are kind of saying that was probably a possibility, and with the day off on Friday, that made sense. But glad it's over. I think I'm surprised at the number. It feels a little low to me, which I was obviously happy about for the Packers. But like I thought we were like in the 60 mil range a year. Mm-hmm. Just because that huge cap increase, and like when you sign every single year, you know, the market for QBs goes up. It doesn't matter. It's always going up. It's never going down. And like with it, another year going by, and like him basically, like who's he with this year? And like Tua, Trevor, and Jared Goff are like all right around the same amount of money. And I'm like, man, I'd rather have Jordan Love. Like, if Joe Burrow signed his contract this year, he'd be making $65 a year. Like, it's just, and that to me is the value, I guess. I don't know. Those are my thoughts.
It'll be interesting to see what Dak gets, because he seems to be the next one up.
I was certainly never concerned that this wasn't going to get done, especially when he showed up to training camp and he was participating in all the meetings and everything. I mean, I guess I would assume that it was a mutual decision between Love and the team to not have him practice. Like the absolute last thing we need to happen is a, you know, catastrophic Teddy Bridgewater type injury when he's going into the last year of his deal.
It was something that Jason Wilde, or I think Sean Clifford, accidentally revealed to Wilde, and I'm sure other people picked up on it too, but Jordan Love, the Saturday before camp kicked off, was told by his people, and they told the Packers that he was not going to practice. Apparently it was against Love's wishes to hold out for this, which I found interesting.
Yeah. I was texting my brothers on Friday night after the news broke, and their reaction was basically, God, we dumped all this money into a quarterback and it take up so much of our, you know, salary cap space, and at least Rodgers won us a Super Bowl before he signed his huge deal and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, this is the nature of doing business in the NFL. It's like you have to pay a franchise quarterback. Like you're not going to win a Super Bowl without a franchise quarterback. And this is the going rate. I mean, after Tua signed on Friday morning, it was like, okay, well, I knew that Love was going to get more per year than Tua because he's a year younger, and I also think he played better last year than Tua did. So I figured it'd be within the $54, $55 million range. And I was hoping all along he would get signed before Tua, but I didn't realize that Tua and Love had the same agent.
Mm-hmm. Same agency, different agents, I believe.
Okay, agency.
But yes, either way, they were obviously in contact. And yeah, the whole thing is kind of goofy. The markets are always a little weird, especially the last few years. You know, the 2 years ago when we traded away Devontae Adams, the receiver market went a little crazy. Now we're in this kind of odd spot with the quarterbacks where it almost feels like, I don't want to say a win-win, but guys like Daniel Jones, too, you see he got paid last year. But it's these contracts now, the way they write them, and if you look at like the Trevor Lawrence one, too, it's a really pay-as-you-go type deal. And it almost gives incentive to these teams to move on from a guy if they suck. You know, Daniel Jones has always been like a middling quarterback, and then he had that one good year against the Vikings, and you know, they had that playoff win, and then he got his deal. But now it's like, okay, you've pushed ahead when you can almost move on from him after he kind of proved it before getting the new deal. And now it's like, if he sucks this year, you'll be like, oh, well, sorry, Mr. Jones, we got to move on from you because your cap hit next year is astronomical and all that shit. So I don't know. The other thing to touch on with the low cap hits, like I said, how from 2024 to 2027, it doesn't go over $33 million for a cap hit. This is from Justice Mosqueda, too, from his article on what are they? Acme Packing. But then 2028, the cap hit is $74 million, which is fucking nuts. So it's one of those where obviously they would rework his deal to that point, and we're expecting that new TV deal to you know, get paid out here in the next 4 years, I believe. So then, once again, it's going to ramp up. And if you just remember, 2 years ago, Aaron Rodgers got his new deal, and I believe that one, he averaged $45 million, $47 million maybe, per year on that. So 2 years, it's gone up $10 million. You know, if that just continues, it's not like that 75 is crazy, and they're going to move shit around anyways with void years. So, I don't know. Interesting. Glad it's over. Billy?
It's interesting that Justice Mosqueda has the cap hit not exceeding $33 million until 2028. I'm on Spot Track, and it tells a different story. It says $36 million in 26 and $42.5 million in 2027. So...
yeah,
there's some discrepancy there. I don't know. I'm not saying he's wrong. I mean, he's one of the best in the business, but maybe just because people don't know the full value or the full breakdown of the contract. Or I mean, there can't be different ways to calculate cap hits, can there be?
I wonder if it has something to do with the dead, but the void years at the end of it too, and that funny money.
Oh,
and
sure.
It's just kind of a placeholder ahead of it. Yeah. So. But yeah, either way, glad it's over with. Such a stupid storyline and something to worry about. I was going to tweet it out. I never did, but I had a nice, you know, two pictures of Favre and Rodgers, like their arms around each other. And then I had, you know, what is it? 31 years, zero holdouts, zero drama. And then Jordan Love with like his hoodie on and like looking mad. And it's 1 year, one holdout, number one story going in the training camp. And obviously that's a bunch of bullshit anyways. But... on to actual football. Jordan Love, too. The last 2 days, the Packers have finally been in pads. They've had six practices so far. Yeah, six practices so far. They also practiced on Sunday. It was kind of funny. To start camp, he went 1 for 8 in like the team drills and everything, so he wasn't very good, but everyone was talking about how he was very rusty. He overthrew receivers like over their heads his first two throws, but...
0 for 4 with one pick to start the day.
Yeah, very good. And then today he was picked off by Kalen King, the 7th round corner out of Michigan State. So ups and downs, but it seems like he's locking in. Obviously, he's getting accustomed to playing actual football after not practicing since, what, May? And even if that's, those have all been in shorts. So I don't think anyone really cares to get into 2 days of practice for Jordan Love, but a more interesting thing... the offensive line, probably one of the bigger question marks just to see how it's going to shake out by the end of training camp. But to start things off, they have not looked great. This is usually the case early in training camp where the defense looks better than the offense, but especially with a new look defense that this team, that this offense hasn't gone up against as much compared to Joe Barry's defense. They're obviously going to struggle, and especially the Sean Clifford and Pratt were... I mean, Clifford, it's like automatic that he throws a pick in a given practice, it feels like. Kind of the same thing he was doing last year. But right now, I would say the assumed offensive line from left to right is Walker, Elton, Myers, Sean Ryan, and then Morgan, and then Zach Tom. Yeah.
You think so, Jordan Morgan is not in the top five?
I have Morgan. Well, right now.
Ryan is what I was saying.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll get into it here, too, because it's been a little goofy with how things have gone so far, just with injuries, and Josh Myers has been out a couple times, one for personal reasons, then he got banged up a couple days ago, too. But it's been, I guess, the biggest surprise so far, one, Elton, not Jacob Monk, the 5th-round pick, has played center when Myers was out with that personal matter. It's been Ryan and Morgan have been the ones playing right guard the most, so that seems to be the number one battle on the offensive line. And then again, with Zach Tom out with this torn bicep injury, and this is something else because it's been so long we haven't talked about, so it's a little sidebar here. Zach Tom tore his bicep. Day after that, we signed that former first-round pick.
Dillard.
Andre Dillard, and... So new strength and conditioning staff, right? Everyone wanted a new strength and conditioning staff. Aaron Hill is the new guy, came over from San Francisco. reporters have said, one, that the stretching period is almost twice as long as it was with the previous staff that was there. So, since they've taken over, Zach Tom tore his bicep. Tucker Kraft tore his bicep. And Matt LaFleur all tore their biceps in the span of literally a month, which is a little concerning when you have a brand new staff in here. But I was surprised Zach Tom, he wasn't on the PUP list and he's quote unquote practice. He hasn't played in any actual team drills or anything, only individuals. So that's reassuring that he's, because well, torn bicep, you would think.
His,
you know,
I don't
forever.
Think his, he doesn't show up on like all the injury reports though, which is funny because like if you tore your bicep tendon, mm-hmm. you're done. So I don't think that's, it seems odd to me. Something seems weird.
No, I mean, they all tore. I think his must have just happened a little sooner. Maybe he recovered better, but they, that's what, because when Brian Bulaga was told that he tore his bicep, he was like, oh my God, he's going to be, you know, pushing to start the season. So it is rather shocking that he's practicing right now. Again, not any actual team drill things, but he's at least out there, which is reassuring. But either way, Zach Tom still not actually running with the starters out there, which has led to some other things. The guy who has gotten the most run at right tackle is Zach Tom out. Hasn't been Jordan Morgan, who, like I said, has been battling at guard against Ryan from last year. It isn't Dillard, who started camp as the starter and fucking got demolished, so they put him to second team. Not Caleb Jones, who's been hurt, or Luke Tenuta, who's been on the team for the last 2 years. But it's been Kadeem Telfort, the undrafted player last year. I don't even have his college written down. I forgot where he's out of. Oregon State or something like that.
UAB.
But he's UAB. Oh, God. Yeah.
Nailed it.
Yeah. but he's another, if you remember what we've talked about, Goody loves these gigantic offensive linemen. He is 6'7.5", 322 pounds.
Just a monster.
Absolute monster. And again, this is year two. This offseason, I think everyone saw Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks were working out down in Florida together. Telfort was also by them, was working out with them. So they're out like running routes and shit. And Telfort apparently was like on the side, like doing pass blocking drills and like running and shit. So was not expecting to hear him called up as much as he has to start training camp here, but he's kind of been the right tackle so far. I'm sure things will change, but a lot of moving parts here. Initial thoughts, Todd, are you concerned with the way the offensive line is shaking out, you know, early on here?
I'm not concerned yet. There's plenty of time. There's plenty of like, feels like this, like the tackle position is filled with number two guys, right? Yep. I mean, obviously, like we have plenty. Caleb Jones, I mean, Travis Glover's a rookie or whatever, but like he had some potential in college. You know, you got Dillard, who, I mean, has sucked, but like was a prospect, and Luke Tenuta, and then Telfort, who we weren't even, I had no idea. We were expecting to see him.
He was on the practice squad all of last year.
And they're all mammoths, right? Like, Travis, mm-hmm. The left tackle position is like, Travis Glover is like the smallest at like 6'6 and like 217 or 215 or whatever it is. Like, he's the smallest, which is insane. But like, I don't know. Like, I feel like you move these guys around by the end of camp, we're going to feel okay about it. Probably not great. Maybe Sean Ryan does outshine at the beginning of the season Jordan Morgan for that guard spot, but I feel like that's just setting the stage for Jordan Morgan to take it over by week six. I mean, that's just my thought. Like, or Sean Ryan badly misses a pass protection and then immediately Jordan Morgan is in there. Like, that's why I feel it's going to happen, because it's like Sean Ryan run game, great. Pass game, not so great. Thumbs down. Like, it wasn't, I don't know. Like, it was fun to watch him in the run game, but you got to protect Jordan Love. So I feel like Jordan Morgan gets on the field. The top five that you said, plus Jordan Morgan, minus Sean Ryan, is what I think.
I agree with you, Todd. I mean, the Packers almost always bring their rookies along slowly. So I would be shocked if Jordan Morgan starts on opening day. But I agree with you. It feels like I'm trying to remember who it was. Was it was it Elton's rookie year that he was fantastic during camp and we sat him for the first handful of games until...
I think he rotated with Lane Taylor, like the first three games, and then Taylor got hurt, and then Elton
that's
never
what it was.
Back.
Okay. At any rate, so quick fact check: Tom and Kraft tore their pecs, not their bicep. But
yeah, you know, as I was saying it, I was like, I think it was the pecs. Then I look, I'm like, no, I wrote bicep, so that has to be it.
Anyway,
I know they're all benching, so yes, obviously the pec makes more sense.
Anyway, at any rate, I'm not really concerned that the offensive line doesn't look great. Like you said, it's early on in camp, and the defense almost always looks better early on in camp. I mean, I remember last year the defense, you know, supposedly looked great at the start of camp. And I think the other thing to remember too is, you know, Myers has been out. He just returned to practice, and Tom is obviously out. So the guys that we had out there haven't played a ton of NFL football. I mean, it was basically Elton Jenkins that has, you know, more than 1 year of experience with significant playing time. So it's not really surprising that, you know, maybe they're struggling a little bit. And I think too, especially early on in camp, the coaches are just trying to get as many guys in there and see what they can do. And then as camp goes on, they'll start to dial it in. And, you know, maybe we start to see a little less of a Kadeem Telfort or a Luke Tenuta or, you know, something like that.
Also throw in young guys to the wolves of Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, Lucas Van Ness, Kingsley and Abari. Like, maybe not the scariest front four plus a couple in the world, but like, they're going to rip apart rookies and guys who haven't played football, right? Like, it's going to be a little bit of a bloodbath.
And it's, I don't know. The other thing, something that's came out of this offseason and talking about Jeff Hafley's defense is how he's, as opposed to, you know, having gap responsibilities with Joe Barry and that being the biggest thing, he's looking for the defensive line to actually be disruptive and just cause havoc in the backfield. So that's probably a bit of a difference from last year as well. But yeah, the offensive line, I'm curious to see how it shakes out. Again, I guess I didn't say this before, Jacob Monk, it seems like he struggled a bit, the fifth round pick out of Duke, the center. He got, apparently, I think it was two plays where Jonathan Ford like overpowered him, and that's the most positive thing I've ever heard about Jonathan Ford since he's been on the Green Bay Packers. So that's interesting, because I think if he was really showing out, just looking at what they've done at times when Myers has been out, Elton goes to center, and then there's been times too where Elton moves to, you know, left guard. So he's still not part of that competition at right guard. So if you moved, and well, I should say this, they've also moved Sean Ryan at times to left guard. So potentially Elton to center, and then Ryan to left guard, and then maybe Jordan Morgan at right guard. I don't know. We'll see. Still a lot of things to, you know.
Oh, God. Does anybody think that Sean Ryan can snap a football? Because I feel like if you're going to be bad at pass pro, center's the place to be bad at pass pro, right? I mean,
yeah,
doesn't it? I mean, you're surrounded by guys. If you're smart enough to make the calls, then obviously it's like you do have to be smart to play center because it's coverage calls, right? Like, and you and like the snap is obviously a huge part. Like, if you screw it up, there's no chance. But like, almost feels like if we're talking Jordan Morgan's out of the picture to start the season, like, almost makes more sense to put your guy who can't pass pro as well at center, but maybe I'm an idiot. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
we'll see.
Like Myers always felt like a guard to me. He's gigantic. Like, he's a mover.
I don't think it's ever going to happen now because he's...
It doesn't seem like it. Yeah, I don't know.
This is what, year four or five for him, and he's never... I can't remember him ever taking a snap at guard. So that's why
I think
pretty squared away.
I think he was exclusively a center at Ohio State too. So, I mean, has the dude ever played guard?
No, but they've always listed him as an offensive lineman. They've always shown like center and guard. They might have changed that recently, but he was always listed as a guard on the Packers website, which is odd. So, I don't know. Either way, moving on. Offensive line, we'll see what happens there. Running backs. All right, Josh Jacobs is a starter. And again, early in camp, there isn't a ton you can take away. You know, only two practices with pads on. A.J. Dillon, what do you know? He's in the best shape of his life. He's ripped every single practice. You'll see him with his shirt off. You know, he's got to get some pictures in. There was a he lost like 15 pounds. He said he's lost like 5% body fat. He also got absolutely fucking demolished by Keyshawn Nixon.
I was going to say, one of the smallest players by Keyshawn Nixon yeah. on like a play where like he saw him coming. It wasn't like a surprise. Like it was a swing pass.
Yeah,
there was and like, dude, there's a guy in front of you and he gets depleted. Like I was like a little bit like, because he had like a big run, whatever day they tweeted it out. Like he had like a 25-yard run. I think I sent it to you, Spencer. But then like you watch the tape of him getting de-cleated by Keyshawn Nixon, the guy who's got away like what does Keyshawn Nixon weigh? A buck 90?
I thought it was going to be my guess.
And you're just like, dude, like what? How do you? It just runs with no tenacity. I don't understand it. Like at all.
Yeah, but either way, we don't have to, and this is me saying, we don't have to stay on.
It's frustrating.
AJ Dillon being bad. Marshawn Lloyd hasn't practiced. I believe he's on the PUP still. I don't know if he's been ready since the start of camp, but either way, he hasn't practiced in any of these six, which is not vying well for the possibility of AJ Dillon getting cut. Emmanuel Wilson has had some flashes as well. Again, I forgot who tweeted out, but that he's flashing. He always has these plays just about every single day, which is kind of the story of last year too. So I don't know. I don't think there's a ton to figure out there until Marshawn Lloyd gets on the field. I haven't heard much about any of the undrafted guys either, like Hightower, I believe is one of the names. So once again, we'll see once family night occurs on next Saturday and then the preseason games after that.
Emmanuel Wilson be eligible for practice squad at this point?
Yes. I think pretty much everyone can still be on a practice squad. I'm trying to think of who the veteran guys are last year who were still. A lot of those COVID rules have just kind of kept, they've kept them going.
Okay.
At wideout, again, there is not a lot to shake out here. Jaden Reed, Christian Watson, Dontayvion Wicks, Romeo Doubs, Bo Melton, Malik Heath, and even Samari Toure has made a couple plays somehow. Watson still claiming he's healthy. He had a really long catch during the scrimmage last practice in the 2-minute drill, which set up a touchdown. Dontayvion Wicks and Keyshawn Nixon fought. They don't appear to be great friends. And again, there just isn't a ton to add. It seems like a very established group here where we know who the top four are. We are pretty confident in Bo Melton being the fifth, and then probably Malik Heath being the sixth if we keep one, and if not, we'll see. But
Grant DuBois making moves in the special teams area.
You're right.
I think Wes tweeted out, maybe a couple others tweeted out too, but like he had some good punt coverage. Was it punt coverage or kick coverage? I think it was punt coverage.
Yeah, you're right. I get Malik Heath and Bo Melton, or Malik Heath and Grant DuBois mixed up just because they were both, you know, the rookies from last year that were kind of at the end of the roster. But yes, so I don't know. Because what? Samari Toure, you just want to forget about him. But with Malik Heath and Grant DuBois, that's seven wideouts right there. So that'll be. There hasn't been much pulling away yet, but I'm sure once preseason comes, we'll see what happens. Tight end, again, not much to report here. Very, very, very quiet training camp so far for Luke Musgrave. It's just training camp. It's just practices. But I feel like we had a lot of buzz this time last year. And even with Kraft being out, I can't remember there being any big plays reported from Musgrave, which is, you know, oh my God, it's terrible. The sky is falling. But I just thought that was interesting. Tyler Davis has been practicing since tearing his ACL and then coming back to the Packers. But running backs, wideouts, tight ends, a lot of young players, a lot of exciting players. Who are you guys looking forward to the most to hear from this training camp? And who do you think is going to bust out here this training camp, I should say?
I mean, I'm excited for Josh Jacobs. I'm also excited for the Tucker Kraft, Luke Musgrave combo. I've always loved the idea of a two tight end offense ever since Gronk and Aaron Hernandez.
R.I.P.
But the wide receiver room is intriguing to me just in the simple fact that there's so many dudes in that room. And I'm like, who's the guy that isn't gonna get reps? Like that's the way I look at it. It's like not who's getting reps, who's not getting reps in that room. And like that to me is the most interesting position, because there's so many, like if you look at nationally, like the names, nobody knows these guys, right? They know Christian Watson, maybe Romeo Doubs, but like nobody knows these guys. And I'm like, man, this room is full of studs. So it's going to be interesting to see who is the odd man out, I guess, as we go forward. Because, like, Wicks, strong showing at the end of last season. Obviously, we know where Reed's at. Watson was hurt last year, and Romeo Doubs was a safety net. And then it's like, you throw in Bo Melton. It's like, who's out in that scenario is interesting to me.
It has been, I watch a lot of fantasy football dynasty stuff and like into the draft and all that. I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos and shit. It is funny how accurate these national guys have been looking at them. At least I agree with their thoughts, because they're all like, we don't know what to do with the Green Bay Packers wide receivers, because they have four guys who are all legit. And some of them even say Bo Melton isn't bad. Because Dontavian Wicks has had so much hype as far as, like, in the fantasy football world this offseason. And even Romeo Doubs has, like, the best chemistry with Jordan Love, where he's, like, as far as fantasy football is concerned, I might just take the third or fourth Packers wideout in upcoming drafts, just because I think it's going to be tough to figure out playing time. But I was very surprised with how accurate a lot of these national, because obviously it's their job, too. But I don't know jack shit about, like, well, a little bit about, like, the Panthers receiving corps, some random-ass team. But Billy, offensive weapons,
If Marshawn Lloyd wasn't injured, I mean, I would definitely say him, just because, I mean, as everybody who listens to this podcast regularly knows, we're not the biggest fans of A.J. Dillon in the world. And, I mean, certainly after he was drafted, we were all pretty excited about him, but with him being out, I would say, you know, kind of echo what Todd was saying, the wide receivers and specifically Bo Melton. Like, I want to see if he can follow up his hot streak to end the season last year, where he just showed up and all of a sudden he had like a 100-yard game against Minnesota and was the first receiver to go over 100 yards for us. Like, it wasn't Watson, it wasn't Dawes, wasn't Reed, wasn't Wicks, you know, all these guys that we were just talking about. It was Bo Melton, and just a couple of weeks after he got called up from the practice squad. So, I want to see if that was a fluke or if, you know, he's a diamond in the rough and a real baller.
The guy that I am most interested in, and, ooh, pause. And I talked about it at the top, but it is Luke Musgrave, just because, again, with how competitive the receiver room is. And I think the running back room, this is probably going to be the closest we'll ever get to a bell cow, or that we've seen from Matt LaFleur as far as divvying out those carries. But Luke Musgrave, and with Tucker Kraft still being out, he's on the PUP. And I feel like it's going to be a slow transition back into getting, you know, accustomed to playing football. That Luke Musgrave has the least amount of competition for snaps. So I think, especially to start the year, and we remember he got his liver, kidney, whatever, ruptured, so he didn't play a ton down the stretch last year. If he can hit the ground running again, I think he could have a huge season, which, again, we haven't had in forever. Because so much, this time last year, I feel like he was the number one guy we were talking about. Because he was always getting open in the middle of the field. Well, I guess I should say getting open, and it was either big plays or the big misses where him and Jordan Love just couldn't connect, or, of course, Luke would lose his feet and fall over with the ball in his hands.
Maybe this means that the defense has finally figured out how to cover a tight end over the middle of the field.
My very great research going into this, I was like, I haven't seen anyone talk about Luke Musgrave. So then I searched Twitter for Luke Musgrave. Nothing on the top hits. I scrolled down, and one of the things that popped up was his highlight against Darnell Savage last year at Family Night, where he just juked him, and he goes out of the frame of the shot. And it's like, ah, that's why Luke hasn't showed up as much this year. He's not going up against fucking, you know, Darnell Savage and Mr. Simone Biles. So that's probably
Mr. Simone Biles.
With that, we will have a quick commercial break.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, we are back with the Packers defense during training camp. The defense has been good. Again, the D-line has, well, I think the two big stories has one been the dominance of the defense, albeit they've been going against fucking Pratt and Sean Clifford. But it's been the front seven are causing havoc and the quarterbacks can't do anything. The big thing has been like, yeah, Clifford threw a pick, but it probably would have been a pack or a sack. But then at the same time, the secondary has had so many interceptions, right, which I don't know if you remember, but come the regular season last year, they had next to none, which was not good, which is one of the reasons why Joe Barry is no longer with us. Rest in peace. But the other thing to talk about with the defensive line, Kenny Clark, new contract, a little bit surprising, 3 years, $64 million. There was no news about it at all leading up. There was very little chatter of them like even talking, and then he got his deal before Jordan Love. I found this interesting. I think Bill Huber wrote this. Kenny had the largest cap hit for a defensive lineman this year at 27.5. So part of this deal is going to get that cap number down and just move money around. Either way, very happy Kenny's still with us. I really thought this was going to be his last year with the Packers, just with the way we've been going younger and younger. But with a three-year extension and Kenny Clark still only being 21 years old, he's still going to be very young when the deal's done. Nothing? Okay.
I think it also might be an indictment of the rest of the defensive tackle room. I mean, outside of Devontae Wyatt, and he hasn't shown a ton. It's like TJ Slayton flashes a little bit.
I think Devontae Wyatt.
Carl Brooks had some nice moments.
Devontae Wyatt is like the pressure dude. Like, he's almost there. And my hope was this defense maybe helps him get there.
I think he's going to be better in the 4-3.
He should be. And then Carl Brooks is the other name. It's funny. I almost think the opposite of you, Billy, where I think we have some pretty good depth. And I bet one of the other defensive linemen will become a perennial, not perennial, but, you know, Kenny Clark's made like 3 Pro Bowls. He's a pretty solid player. I think we've got another one of those guys in this room. So once Kenny's done here, you know, we'll lock one of those guys up long term too. But at the same time, it's like, who do we have who's going to have a contract coming up? Devonta Wyatt, I think, is in like a contract year, or I guess, well, next offseason it would be if we pick up his fifth-year option or not. So we'll see. The other name that's popped up a ton has been Rashawn Gary. A lot of it was without pads and also going up against Andre Dillard and the other scrubs that we've thrown in there. But his name has came up a bunch. He's getting his hand on the ball too. So that's probably one of the things I'm looking forward to the most on this defense, is to see if Rashawn Gary can actually take that step. You know, last year he started pretty hot, or he'd do like nothing all game and then have a big sack. But the year before that, I mean, fuck, he was an absolute monster. So I'm hoping to see that here in the future. But what are you guys looking for here from the front seven?
I mean, I think I alluded to it, but obviously I think the Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, and then you mix in those ends, and like the depth at end is I think going to be great this year. Especially with Kingsley and Mbare, or JJ and Mbare, his nickname, not having an actual ACL tear or whatever we thought it was at one point last year. Mm-hmm. Like, the depth on the outside and like the pressure that just that front four can create. Cause like, I don't really know how, I mean, I know we're going to pressure, but like, I don't really have a good idea of like how we're going to pressure with those linebackers. But I think just that front four could be disruptive enough to help what I think is the weakness on this defense, which there's a lot of depth at corner. So like, weakness is maybe the wrong word, but like, I'm not sold on corner being amazing. Like, Eric Stokes, when's he going to get hurt? Right? Like, that's going to happen at some point, and then he won't be with us anymore.
Rude.
I mean, look at the history. He's not going to make it past week one. And then,
hey, well, look at Kevin King. He's in Atlanta right now.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is, I think
I'm kidding. He was bad.
I think the front four can, let's just say the front seven can be good enough to cover up any inconsistencies on the back end and allow those guys to make plays, which I think is the strength.
Fair, very fair.
I'm excited to see. I mean, Etchern Cooper, obviously I was ecstatic when we drafted him. I loved him before the draft, and I'm ecstatic that we got him. I'm excited to see him with Quay kind of as a two-headed monster there at linebacker. And then, I mean, Isaiah McDuffie had some really strong moments last year too. So I feel like with the three of them starting, I feel like that linebacker room, at least the starters anyway, are super solid. And I think they could be a real strength on the defense. I'd love to just see Quay and Cooper just run and chase and tackle ball carriers all over the field.
And Isaiah McDuffie.
And McDuffie, yeah.
He mentioned him. So this was... Bill Huber is my favorite. He's... Well, I love all the beat writers except for Ryan Wood and some other shit, whatever. But Bill Huber's great. Especially his practice breakdowns are like must reads if you're a, you know, crazy person like me when it comes to the Green Bay Packers. He had a note. I don't know if this was from today's practice or yesterday's. But he says, at linebacker, the number one unit continues to be Quay Walker in the middle, flanked by Eric Wilson and Isaiah McDuffie. Why does Wilson continue to go ahead of second-round pick Etchern Cooper? Easy. Wilson probably has made more plays than anyone else on defense, which is pretty surprising, shocking to hear. It is only training camp, but making plays is making plays. And when you think back to last year, I mean, this guy, no one is better at jumping at opportunities on this team than Eric Wilson. Obviously, yeah, the fumble recovery against the Niners.
Wasn't on the kick return?
It was a kick return. Yeah.
Keyshawn fumbling. But earlier in the year, too, and I think it happened twice, on a fourth and short, he made the play, making the stop, and he might have even forced the fumble. It was a crazy play to the point where we were like, who's number 45 just to help us turn the ball over? So just a baller, I guess. I don't think he's very big. I think he's a pretty small dude. Every time I see him on the field, I'm like, oh, look at that little baby running around out there. But maybe he's... Maybe he's got a big head. He's got a gigantic head or something. That's why I think he looks like a baby. But I'd rather hear Eric Cooper or Etchern Cooper playing over Isaiah McDuffie than Wilson. So that's interesting. But again, very early in camp, but I had not anticipated hearing Eric Wilson being the guy who's making a ton of plays on defense. Moving on to the secondary. And we mentioned it, you know, in previous episodes too. But again, Xavier McKinney is like the dude. And we've talked about big free agent signings in the past on this podcast. You know, I know we talked like Charles Woodson and Reggie White and how Za'Darius Smith is probably the third best defensive signing, at least the first 2 years. Like, as far as that deal, that was crazy. And the good, like, karma isn't a good phrase there, but the goodwill that Z had around him was huge. The fans loved him, all that shit. Then he turned into a piece of shit. Xavier McKinney seems to be the next guy. He's probably going to leapfrog Za'Darius, but I haven't heard a single negative thing said about this guy. And sometimes you get worried about this big money and, you know, walking around like you're the shit and all that. Every safety has said how great of a leader he is. He's gotten along with Jair, who you would think would be a little sensitive as to who's leading this defense. And then he's the guy making plays out there as well in the secondary. But obviously the thing to talk about would be who's playing alongside him. And they've rotated that quite a bit. Rookie second-round pick Javon Bullard ran with the starters for practices 1, 3, and 5. Rookie Evan Williams, the fourth-rounder from Oregon, got the call for practice 2. And Anthony Johnson Jr. was for practices 4 and 6. And if you remember Ketan Oladipo, who's the fifth-rounder out of Oregon State, he is hurt and still hasn't practiced this training camp. So he's the one kind of odd guy out now. But, yeah, nice. I feel bad for toe injuries. That's it always just seems like such injury. Right. But the other name to talk about there, who we mentioned, is Evan Williams. Now, Wes Hood made this comparison. I listened to one of the things that just came up on YouTube, and he started talking about him, how he was a very undervalued guy in the draft who didn't test well, but he's just a good football player. And I hear that, I'm like, oh, maybe he's the next Micah Hyde, of course. And then Wes, of course, finishes by saying he reminds me of Micah Hyde. He also wears number 33 like Micah Hyde. seems like a smart guy. He was talking about how Jordan Love, it was so different when he came in because of the way he uses his snap count to see what the defense is doing. And Evan's just like, he's clearly a very smart guy, blah, blah, blah. But he's made some plays too. He's had a couple picks. It seems like he's had more interceptions than just about anyone else in the secondary so far in training camp. But I don't know. Outside of that, it's been Jair and Valentine on the outside at corner. Stokes, his name's been popping up quite a bit.
He had two picks in one day and like a couple deflections.
It feels like everyone on defense has had at least one interception, which is bonkers.
Well, when you're going against Clifford and Pratt, yeah, that's not right, surprising.
Exactly.
But it's perfect. Like, that's how we should start training camp, to get this defense going. And then Keyshawn Nixon and Kalen King, the seventh round pick out of Michigan State, they've been strictly the nickel corners. King learning how to just play nickel, and then Bill Huber had him as his like player of the day or whatever. It's funny to see his, again, I'm a loser, his media appearances. His first one was after he got drafted. He was literally crying on the phone because he was supposed to be like a first round pick after his junior year, and then after the falling out of his senior year, he was the third to last pick in the NFL draft. So going from that crying to today at his presser, he was like the number one guy. All the reporters were around, and even like Keyshawn Nixon and Jair, I think, were holding their cameras up or their phones up to him to like record him because he was the, you know, hot shit of the day. So
pick six of Jordan Love.
Yeah, pick six of Jordan Love. It seems like there's been more than you'd like to hear those pick sixes. I think Jordan's thrown a couple picks as well, but the secondary, any big thoughts here? It's, again, pretty early. It feels like last year, but better as far as who's going to be playing safety, because we only have half of that.
Safety is the fun spot, and I feel like, I think we saw some, I saw this on Twitter, a couple Bullard snaps in the slot, and I think he actually had, did he have a pick out of the slot? Or maybe I'm mixing that up, but like, Bullard in the slot is kind of interesting, too. He got praise from Matt LaFleur. Evan Williams got praise from Matt LaFleur after Matt LaFleur also said he was being a bozo, saying that he was giving away
that
Xavier McKinney gets to call what safety is in. Is that what it was? It was a weird thing.
Yeah, it was.
But basically, he needs to shut up. It's
the Streisand effect with all this media shit. With Matt LaFleur is always the Streisand effect. He did it with fucking David Bakhtiari last year and Jair Alexander. It's like, just quit giving weird ass answers, because the reporter said, you know, X will be out there, and he tells the other safety how to play it. And that's what it was. And then Matt was like, oh, well, I'm glad he blew it. It's like, Matt, if you just answered the fucking question, no other team's ears would perk up at that. But because you act like, you know, you answer in that way, whatever. Either way, I'm sorry, but it's still, Matt, just let shit go in these pressers. I don't know why.
I've seen Aaron Mosby's name call like on the beat writer's tweets like three or four times, and I was like, that's wild to see him get. I granted it's against the twos and the threes, but like, I thought that was interesting to see his name be brought up in tweets.
Yeah. Do you have anything there, Billy? I know it's very, very interesting.
You stole my thunder on Evan Williams. I saw the same video with Hodkowitz praising Evan Williams and comparing him to Micah Hyde. So I'm disappointed in that. I too am kind of concerned about the depth and the, especially at corner. You know, Jair's kind of been banged up a little bit the last few years. Stokes, we know about his injury history. Valentine looked good last year, but he's still a, you know, second year guy drafted in the seventh. And then it's Corey Ballantyne and Keyshawn Nixon and then Kalen King. So there's just, it doesn't feel like there's a ton of depth there if somebody gets hurt. If they all stay healthy, I do like the guys that we have that are going to see playing time, but there's always going to be injuries, and that's what I get concerned about.
You know, we still have, I don't know, because I am way too optimistic on this team, you know. And, you know, first real episode of the season talking about 2024 here, I'm going to ruin it, but I think we are, I don't know why.
Whoa.
I think it's just all the good mojo. I think we're going to win the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, holy shit.
I like the depth just about everywhere, honestly. Maybe not inside linebacker, but even corner, you know, because we have
There's depth at corner.
We have Valentine. We have Ballantyne, who was sneaky pretty good last year. We got the rookie, and there's always guys sitting out there, and so many safeties. We can just move up and just, you know, if we're in dime or nickel or whatever, we can move those guys around. Like, it just feels like, and this is just the way my brain works, being a Packer fan who is 32 years old, we have a young quarterback, just got his first contract, a very young and talented offense who no one is on their second deal. And then you have a brand new defense that's revitalized. And we have this window. And I think I said it earlier this offseason. In the next 10 years, I think our best chance of winning a Super Bowl is going to be the next 3 years. And it seems like that's what the Packers are thinking too, with the way they structured Jordan Love's contract. Obviously, they're going to want to win a Super Bowl anyways. But I feel giddy about this team right now. So, and you know, in the past, when I felt really good about the team, when Rodgers was the quarterback, I had that little sinking feeling because the team's old. But now I'm not afraid to say it because I'm like, even if we don't win it this year, we got a really good chance the year after that. Way too early to be saying this, but I got to speak my truth.
I mean, I was at the liquor store earlier in the week before Jordan Love signed. And
the fact that you fought like I'm yes. I'm drunk. I must be drunk.
Just to lead off that, I was at the liquor store.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, just in case, just in case my parents listen to this podcast, I was at Hy-Vee earlier in the week.
Wow. Yes. Do not drink.
Buying non-adult beverages.
Perfect.
Anyway, I was wearing a Packer hat, and the cashier sees the hat and he goes, "Oh man, you must be so excited about the year!" Like, he said that apparently Green Bay has like the second best odds to go to the Super Bowl.
Really?
Per Vegas or something.
I know. Some big Super Bowl picker picked like Packers Jets. I forgot who. Ugh. It might have been like Sports Illustrated.
This guy said that we were like the second highest odds or second best odds behind the Ravens at like 8-1. And first of all, I was like, how are the Chiefs not higher than us? But at any rate, it's like, I told him, like, number one, all I care about is that we get Jordan Love re-signed. Like, that was the priority. And then it's, at the same time, it's like, I just want to watch good football. I just want to have a chance at the end of the year. Like, I don't ever want to go into a season where it's like, well, boy, we might go 6-11 this year if we're lucky. You know, I'm just excited that the team is competitive, that they're young, you know, that there is this excitement. I don't ever want to go into a season and just assume that we're going to win a Super Bowl or be that excited. Like, I just want to enjoy the ride and I want to watch good competitive football and, you know, get me to the playoffs and let's see what happens is kind of my attitude.
Yeah, that's fair. And I've said this before. It's not least favorite, but not even close to that. But like the 2011 season was fantastic.
It was the best season.
But it was like almost without a soul. Because what are the big memories from that season? There weren't any big moments. We shit kicked
just every
everyone.
Time Rodgers would heave the ball, you were like, it's a touchdown. Every time.
Yeah, it was always the naked bootleg to Jordy, and at halftime the game would be over. So there was no real like moments, and then we get in the first round or you know the divisional round, and the Giants blow our doors off. You know, like that season kind of sucked to me.
That's like the least satisfying Packers season ever.
That's not true. The season was great. It was like we would walk into a game, and it was like everybody knew who was winning the game, and it was us, and it was so fun. I loved it.
But I also hate that shit because like we have our buddy, we'll call him Ethan. That's not his real name. He had a hat that said like that already had the Packers 2011 Super Bowl written on the hat. And I'm like, this is what I hate.
That was a thing.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I remember that. I mean, I was probably very drunk. I was like, you know, we were drinking or whatever, and I was like, well, where did you get this hat? But I hate that the fans turn into the arrogant assholes when it turns into, is this team going to go undefeated? And then when you lose, it double sucks because it's like, oh, this it was an assumed at least getting to the Super Bowl, and it wasn't even
I will close say the that, difference so. Between like so like when Aaron Rodgers leaves and then it's Jordan Love, and like the beginning of the season was not great, right? Like the first 6 to 8 games, mm-hmm. not great.
October was the worst.
It was
ever.
A rough.
September was rough. Okay. October was
I don't
awful.
Even want to, if I, to go back and listen to what we were saying after the Denver game, I don't even want to hear it. But what I'm saying is that like, it was like when Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback, I was like relieved when we would win. I wasn't excited when we would win. I was relieved
exactly.
when we would win because I was like, we should win. And now I'm like,
it is
I'm
our
like,
birthright.
When we beat Detroit on Thanksgiving, I was like, I was so excited. I had not been that excited in so long of just like literally since we won the Super Bowl. Like I literally was like, I was so excited because yeah. I was like we looked so good and I wasn't expecting it. And it was just like so much more fun. Like, I don't know how to explain how much more fun it is to like feel like a little bit of an underdog and win than it is to be, mm-hmm. to be the big fish all the time. And then, yeah, we've won tons of games, right? Like with Rodgers, but like the feeling with Love is way different. And it just like, that's the excitement that I'm like, that I have going into this year, which is way more fun. Side note. Did you guys see Ketan Oladapo's hair?
No.
Gold.
Okay. Are you sure that's what it still looks like?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I saw pictures. It was like 3 days ago. It's just
oh, okay.
Very well, it's cool. Yellow, but like it's gold, right? It's Packers. It's gold. So,
very cool. Yeah, and to piggyback what you were saying there too, Todd, about the Love and Thanksgiving thing, that is the moment. That is bigger than anything that happened that 2011 season. Now, obviously, recency bias as well, but looking back, that was when we were like, "What's going on with this guy? He's not very good." And it's like, okay, a couple. Because I think it was like the Chargers game was right before that, which we won, and he looked okay. And then it was the Steelers game.
He it was like, but
I don't fucking know, but it was the week before because it was deer hunting weekend, and I watched the Chargers game, and it was a come from behind victory with Dontavion Wicks having a couple really big plays. And the week before that, it was the Steelers or the Rams, but it was those two, and those were both games where it was not Love's fault what was going on. So it was like 3 games in a row of him looking okay to good, and then Thanksgiving happens, and it's like, holy fuck, because Detroit was like the best team in the league, and we didn't score in first halves, and we scored a shit ton. And then the next week, we beat the fucking Chiefs, and it was like, what is going on? I wanted to kill myself a month ago, and now I don't at all.
After the Denver game, I was like, fuck it, throw the season away. We need to tank, let's draft a new quarterback.
Yeah, truly, that seemed like the best course of action to become a successful football team, and I've never been more wrong about something
in my life.
So glad
we were wrong.
Well, let's not forget that we followed up those two wins over Detroit and Kansas City with losses against New York and Tampa Bay. So
yeah, but that was Tommy DeVito. That what are we going to do about that? Oh, sorry, we almost forgot about the special teams. Andres Carlson and Greg Joseph are both 16 out of 18. They both made 55 yarders, so neck and neck so far, kickers. And then, I don't think I mentioned this earlier, but maybe I did. Peter Bowden, the long snapper, was cut out of Wisconsin. He was the top long snapper out of this draft. Very, very exciting. I think we kind of, you know, Orzich hasn't been great, but this wasn't as surprising as I thought it was going to be, because the first presser after, or during like minicamp or whatever, that Rich Bisaccia talked, he did not want to talk about Peter Bowden. He only wanted to talk about Matt Orzich. And when that happened, I was like, oh, Peter's probably not making this team, huh? And then he indeed did get cut. So hopefully Orzich will learn how to snap. Once again, we still have not found a competent long snapper since Brent Goode. So I don't know. Cross my fingers, but I don't think after being in the league for, what, like 5 years or whatever, he's going to completely figure out how to snap. But ending things off here, the biggest thing to talk about, the biggest ramifications, you know, for the Green Bay Packers that have happened since we've been gone. Ed Policy has officially been named the next president of the Green Bay Packers, who will take over in 2025 after the draft, July or something, I think is when they pass the torch in the big ceremony that they'll hold at Titletown on top of the hill. But yes, Ed Policy, highly accomplished, the former Arena League president and CEO. He's got a bunch of legal, sports facility, and commercial real estate experience. He was the big guy behind the Titletown District. Again, the reason, one of the reasons I don't really like Mark Murphy is he doesn't do anything. He just has other people do things, which is also his strength. So I hate him for it, but I also like him for it because he hired Goody. He hired Matt LaFleur. He hired Ed Policy. Those are all really good things, but I just don't know what Mark does well himself. Anyways, so Ed Policy is from Youngstown, Ohio. He graduated from Notre Dame and the Stanford Law Schools. His father is Cameron Policy, who
Carmen.
Was the president.
Yep. R before
what
M.
What did I say?
You said Cameron. It's Carmen Policy.
Yeah, sorry. I cannot read. He was the president and CEO during the Steve Young era of the 49ers. But Ed Policy, the new CEO, again, should not be a surprise. Really glad we hired that firm, whatever, in Ferry. We gave him $1 million to tell us we should hire the guy we wanted to hire. Great use of $1 million. Mark Murphy, definitely not a back-ended deal because they helped you get your job and you gave them $1 million. But
were you telling me that we interviewed like a whole bunch of people apparently for this job too?
Yes. So they interviewed, I forgot what the number was, but it was over 50 people. Wow. Which again, you think about it, it's like, why would you do that? What, you know, to make sense of this, why would you do that? How many actual qualified people could be the president of the Green Bay Packers? And when you think about it long enough, you come to the conclusion, it doesn't make any sense to do that realistically, but it does if you're trying to get a bunch of billable hours.
Right.
So that's what these guys did. They had a bunch of interviews, and then they're like, oh, well, you were right all along. It was at policy. Sorry, here is, you know, 10,000 hours of lawyer time. Please pay me.
And think about it too.
Dollars.
Like, if it's $1 million, and there's what, 50 people? What does that be? It's like 20 grand an interview. Not bad.
We don't know how much it was. Rob Domofsky thought it was at least $1 million. So it could be less, but I bet it's probably not less. But are you guys excited that Ed Policy is going to be the next president? Todd, I'm sure you had a bunch of Ed Policy.
I have so many Ed Policy takes. My biggest Ed Policy take is that Ed Policy does right by you, where Mark Murphy hasn't. So we don't have to hear about how bad Ed Policy is.
Okay. Fair. Billy?
I mean, his dad was extremely successful with the 49ers, and he was always kind of the right-hand man or the assumed successor to Mark Murphy. So, I mean, I can't be upset.
I'm excited to be moving on from Mark Murphy, and Ed Policy seems like, obviously, a great hire. In both statements, they talked about being the stewards of the franchise for the Green Bay Packers. I liked it when I read that Policy had that in there, but then when I saw Mark Murphy also had it in his statement, I was like, well, you know, I don't believe Mark Murphy has been a great steward for the franchise. Obviously, he got the draft. That's whatever. We'll see how that goes next year. I'm sure it's going to be very exciting. But, and I already said, you know, the hiring people and whatever is, you know, what I don't like about Mark Murphy or, you know, the fact that he doesn't do anything.
He's made the Packers a shit ton of money. That's what he's done.
I could be the CEO of any NFL franchise and I would make them a shit ton of money too. If you own a franchise, you're going to make a shit ton of money. You're right.
I mean,
but let's see what happens with Titletown in the next 20 years anyways. Right now it's a thing, but it could turn into a money suck if, anyways, whatever. It doesn't matter. With Mark Murphy, he does not give a shit about Green Bay. I don't think he really gives that much of a shit about the area and what the Green Bay Packers are. Since he got hired, all he has done is tried to bring the Green Bay Packers into the new century of the NFL. He has tried to make them like every other team in the NFL. That is why they have bought houses surrounding Green Bay or surrounding Lambeau Field and torn them down. It's why he got the NFL draft, because that's the new hot thing that every franchise had to go after, and he doesn't give a shit about the fans. He got rid of Fan Fest. He's only, you know, raised tickets every single year without really adding anything,
and the parking
Doesn't every NFL team raise ticket prices year after year?
Not every team. And as I've said before several times before, when they were raising prices, Jason Wilde asked him about this. This was like 5-6 years ago. Wilde brought up, you know, raising ticket prices again for like the sixth year in a row and how fans, you know, had concerns about that. Mark Murphy's response was, yeah, well, fans complain. That's just what they do. I don't like Mark Murphy.
I mean, he's never been good at talking to the media. I'll give you
that.
He's never been
good, I agree, at talking much either. I'm very happy to move on. He's buying his little golf course now so that he can have that to play with when he's retired. What I'm worried about is Ed Policy, with his background in, you know, real estate and shit, I don't want him to turn Lambeau and the surrounding area into Disneyland, into Disney World, which it seems like they're well on their way from. One of the things they have to do with this draft, too, is they tore down that tailgate zone just south of Lambeau because they needed that area to put all this other shit up. And I'm like, how many things are we just going to bend the knee to the NFL for their draft, and how many other things are you going to take away from the actual culture of the Green Bay Packers to put up some other fucking, you know, tailgate area or some other little, I don't know, fucking selfie stick spot?
I want
the Packers to keep being the Packers, and I feel like the longer these big wig CEO types have a handle on them, the worse off we could potentially be. Yes, of course.
Do you remember when Mark Murphy bought that golf course so that it wouldn't turn into like a development? That was pretty nice.
Who?
There was like a Door County golf course he bought.
Wait a minute. We're gonna believe Mark Murphy's narrative on something? The Packers' narrative on something? Like how Devontae Adams wanted to leave Green Bay? How Aaron Rodgers got to decide if he would be the quarterback in 2023.
I think this one was pretty well documented that golf course was like going under and it was going to sell to a developer and he bought it.
I don't know. I
Mark Murphy, I don't know. Pro golf.
But with that, I got my Mark Murphy hate out. Well, wow, we didn't get to an hour 30. We usually do, even when we don't have a ton to talk about. I don't have anything else. I'm sure I'll find a shit more to talk about the next time we have an episode, probably in a week or two. But do you guys have anything else?
Can I go through my notes? I made notes for the first time.
Of course.
And I just like, since I wrote them down, it feels like I should just like go through the ones we didn't talk about. You know what I mean? Like since I...
Todd thoughts.
Edgerrin Cooper, fast and physical. I actually put a Y. I mistyped a Y at the end of fast. That's fassy and physical, which maybe that could be a thing. But he's still behind McDuffie in base, right? We're not super happy about that, right? Eventually, he'll take it over.
Yep.
Behind Wilson in base.
Yes.
Not McDuffie.
He's behind McDuffie, well, too. But yes. So
he's actually behind Quay as well.
He's behind a lot of people. We want to see him move up. I wrote Rashawn Gary, and then in caps I wrote Dog. So... do with that what you will.
Hot take. Okay.
Travis Glover, no news.
Did you write no news for everybody else on the team that there's no
news?
I wrote something for
all the rookies. And I think I have another one that had no news. No, I wrote Ketan Oladapo, yellow hair, and then I wrote toe injury. So that was not no news. There was news. I wrote Tyron Hooper, solid in the run game. Could he see the field and base? Maybe. As a Sam? Who knows?
He's got... Well, that's the thing. Is he above Edgerrin Cooper?
Not
or is he
now.
Also behind Eric
not
Wilson,
now. Not
Isaiah
now,
McDuffie, and Quay
Walker?
Because
he was another candidate for no news. So, we don't know a lot about him. I also wrote Michael Pratt, outshowing Sean Clifford, QB2, is what I wrote.
Yeah, I hope that's what they go with, just because even... just that throw against the Vikings, it's like, this is not an NFL arm. And the one thing about Pratt is that he does have a pretty strong arm. So it's like, it seems like he's got a higher ceiling than Clifford, who I would think could stick around on a practice squad.
Either way, if something happens to Jordan Love where he gets hurt and has to miss time, the team is screwed. Whether it's Pratt or Clifford, we're in deep trouble.
Last I wrote, Jair Dog. It wasn't in all caps this time, so, you know.
Okay. Really, I guess, really, really astute. Yeah, I guess, I mean, I also, yeah, Rashawn Gary has looked good so far. There's been more interceptions. I'm very happy with that.
These were just my notes. And so if you like them, please like and subscribe. If you don't, like and subscribe perfect. Anyway. You can hear my notes next week.
Seamless.
So, Spencer, I wanted to ask because I was a Lucas Van Ness hater when we drafted him. And one of my concerns was that he played in the 4-3 in college. And then he was switching to 3-4 outside linebacker. Well, now that he's in the 4-3, one of my reasons for not liking the guy is completely out the window. I'm still not a huge fan of him because I don't know that he's that great of a player, but I'm curious. I haven't heard anything about him this training camp, but I'm also not on Twitter these days, so I'm not in the know necessarily.
I saw the same headline for both Rashawn Gary and Lucas Van Ness, where they're like, I like that my hand is in the dirt. Two separate, but the same exact things. But yeah, Lucas Van Ness, and I kind of thought this, or I've thought about these guys in the past too. Well, Jordan Love was almost kind of like that. He feels like a bonus first round pick, you know, because it's not like he was a huge contributor. And then you stop and think about it and you're like, oh, he was the 14th overall pick in the 2023 draft. And we're more looking at or have talked about guys like Carl Brooks than LVN, you know, at times. It's not like he was this big shining star last year. So, again, you know, we were talking about even Devonta Wyatt and shit more than LVN, who we didn't mention at all. So I'm very curious to see if he pops out this year, too, because even week one, remember he had that sack on Justin Fields, didn't have a ton after that, but getting his hand in the dirt, week one, I think we're going to be really good. I think we have a really talented front who can actually rush the passer and then a secondary who can actually catch the
ball.
So
this defense doesn't feel like it fits Preston Smith very well. So that's why I feel like LVN gets on the field more.
Yeah, and he has been kind of the odd man out. I think he took some type. Yeah, he did take a pay cut early on this offseason, which he can earn back with incentives, which has always kind of been the case with what they've done with edge rushers.
I was going to say that I thought that Preston Smith was a pretty good fit for the 4-3 because he's, again, got his hand in the dirt, and he's always been such a good run defender.
And he's got that tummy. But yeah, I don't think he's ever defender, played it.
He's a bigger dude.
He's not disruptive.
But he might be the a very good comparison to Aaron Kampman.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It just feels like this defense is fast and disruptive, and it doesn't... Like, it feels like that's where Halfley wants to go with it, and he doesn't feel fast and disruptive to me.
What I'm saying about the Aaron Kampman thing is that when we went to a 3-4, it was like, oh, this guy doesn't really fit.
Right.
And Preston has not played in a 4-3 before. That's not what Washington ran. So that's why I feel like you're teaching an old dog a new trick. So let's see if he can, you know, play dead or fetch the ball with that.
Well, and
terrible analogy.
I think this is the right time to be putting him in that role, I guess, because I mean, how many years does he have left on his deal?
Surprisingly, a lot. I think he's locked up at least until 2026. Because we looked at it last year, and it was like, oh yeah, that's right. We just gave him an extension.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So
I was wrong.
He might actually be he could sneaky stick around a while because his cap hits are going to be pretty minuscule, I'm pretty sure, in the future here. So,
but maybe this year is another learning year for Van Ness, and then he, you know, kind of takes over and Preston Smith comes in situationally, rotates in.
I think they switch out a lot. 25. I think that's a pretty heavily rotating position.
I think Brenton Cox leads the team in sacks.
Wow.
And with that, I don't have anything else. We don't have anything else. So
we're done.
One,
don't speak for me.
One, I need to find the time to put together a new intro, so I apologize that Aaron Jones and David Bakhtiari are still in it. And I also haven't come up with a new outro, so with that, Eric Koskinen, please don't sue us. Anywhere I quit my job,
worked all year, I worked all month. Then they took my money away.
Simone Biles also hit like a some gymnastics thing that had never been done.
You could tell me anything she does has never been done. You watch
what's have you watch, did you see the clip though of her doing the thing?
She floats in the air.
But did you see the clip of her doing whatever the thing hadn't been done before at her landing?
I love how it's so obscure that you just describe it as doing the thing.
I'm like, I don't even know. It's like a double half hitch flip. Like, I have no idea what it was called, but it was like something pike, maybe something like that. But like when she landed, I was like, both my Achilles would have torn in half and I would have been laying on the ground. Like, just to land the way that she landed with her, like, her head is like at her knees and her feet land flat on the ground. I was like, I'd be dead. And my body would be in pieces.